Audi Forum Nights give Melbourne Theatre Company audiences the chance to hear firsthand from members of the cast and creative team of each show. Continue listening to hear from the cast of Brian Friel's Faith Healer as they answer questions from the Audi Forum Night audience, hosted by MTC's Literary Director, Chris Mead.
Welcome to Audi Forum Night. Thanks so much for sticking around. My name again is Chris, and I'll be facilitating this discussion with the fine company of actors. Just so you know, there's about 90 lighting cues, about 60 sound cues. There's a subwoofer just behind this cyclorama, which is about the size of a small Audi. So, you know, it's pretty extraordinary. You wouldn't know that such a simple play is actually incredibly complicated. For those of you who don't know, it was written in 1979 by Brian Friel. Kind of started a kind of extraordinary period in his writing life, but we'll probably get to that if you have questions about him or his writing, but I'm sure you've got questions for the actors. That was really just stocking filler time, so you could start thinking up questions if you haven't already got them. I could keep going, obviously, forever. It will be a monologue eventually, watch out. So does anyone have a question? Please put your hand in the air. Yes. I'll repeat all the questions because some of you might not be able to hear up the back. So the question was for the actors about accents, how they prepare, how regionally specific you got, I suppose, and when they started, when you brought them into the rehearsal room, I suppose, that sort of thing.
I did a bit of preparation before I started rehearsal, and that's what I did.
What do you mean by preparation? What does that actually mean? Do you listen to tapes?
Yeah.
Do you watch movies?
Yep. And just hopefully that it fits with the language that you're using. And it's really, you can't do it without it with this one. You can't, can you? And it sort of got better as you, the accent got better as you got. It's written in that rhythm. It's just written in that rhythm.
There's probably a supplementary question about punctuation, so we'll come back to that in a sec. But, Paul, it's a...
The script at the top, the calls for... It says, Teddy is a Cockney, and he says, I have made no attempt to write it, you know, in Cockney style. So it's just written in English, just plain grammar, whatever. And so it's directed that Teddy is a Cockney and it must be done in that accent. So there was no decisions for me to make about what accent to do.
Well, I never think about them. I don't think about accents ever. You have a vague idea and you find... I just believe in finding your own voice through a role. And a few smart asses will tell you that it's not right, but it doesn't matter. As long as it's coming out truthfully and you can hear it in your head, that's all that matters. And if the audience, if you believe it, the audience possibly do, well, 70% of them.
Yeah.
Well, we were chatting backstage about punctuation and about, you know, actors go to acting school sometimes and, you know, part of the training is to get control of that diaphragm so you can be heard in the backstage. But in this play in particular, you'd think it's written in prose, and yet the punctuation is a key part of the delivery mechanism system. You know, the way that the line breaks, the way that... OK, you don't agree, Mr?
No, punctuation. Throw that to the dunny as well. God, yeah.
Yeah, Judy wouldn't say that.
I write a text out and I get rid of every punctuation mark, every comma, full stop, exclamation mark, gone. Get it out. You know...
But it is, it's written like a musical score, this piece, wouldn't you say, Colin?
Well, it's very, very excessively musical. And I reckon the reason they put punctuation in plays is that so that when people read them, they think, oh, well, he's not a cretin, he obviously knows how to punctuate. But he doesn't want the actor to look at the punctuation. He doesn't care whether you know it's... He doesn't want you to act a comma, otherwise you'll ruin his play. You know, he doesn't want you to act, pause, beat, dash, dot, dot, dot. He's thinking, no, I'm just indicating that there might be something here if you want to find it. The last thing any good writer wants you to do is even look at his punctuation. That's for the people that read the play. So the publisher knows that he went to school or something. That's all. There's nothing to do with acting, punctuation. Nothing to do with it. If you can't find your own punctuation, you shouldn't do plays.
So the question was... about the specificity of the time period, about kind of when it's read and when it was written, but when it was when it's set, if it's set in any particular time, and whether why I suppose the question of faith healing, you know, was it particularly big at that time, or is it something more timeless? Who wants to go?
I think it's set in 1967, around about there. The 47 is Teddy referring to that winter of 47, a particularly bad winter when the pigeons all died from galloping shingles. but when you work out the various clues in the script that are referred to, I think, isn't that right, that we've sort of settled on 1967 as about where it's...
But it's faith healer, faith healing. It's, you need a busload of faith to get by, I suppose.
And if you've tried everything else, you know, if you're in a situation where, you know, Western medicine's failed you Eastern medicine, meditation, or everything else, you know, if you're in a desperate situation, you'll try anything, wouldn't you?
But I suppose there's also the question of the bigger metaphor about what happens when a room comes together and believes in something, and what is that? What is this relationship that's happening between them and you, and what you're believing in, and what might be possible?
Which is theatre.
Poised, mute, waiting in the half light.
Yeah, they're artists.
I mean, and the people who came, what is there to say about them? You know, it's so many levels to the play. It's the more you do it, it's such an intellectually extraordinarily rich play by such an extraordinary writer. The layers go on and on and on and on. It's bottomless. It really is. But the faith healer is that it's they're all faith healers in a way, you know. It's about such a sense of place too. And where do you get it from? Where does it come from in life? He poses the question, and Grace says she couldn't understand it. And Teddy says, what a gift, what an art, you know, what's it all? Who are we to say? I mean, just because, well, yeah, it's not. As Friel says, you know, a memory imagined is no less real than something that actually happened, in his view, you know.
But it's definitely a very spiritual play too, isn't it? For us as players, it haunts you, doesn't it? It haunts you during the day before you come in and perform it. And these characters, you feel that they actually existed. You know, they actually did exist. It's bizarre. It's such a beautiful piece of writing. And Frank's the paganism and the Catholicism and all the stuff. Frank sacrifices himself on the last day of August, the first day of September, which is the pagan ritual they used to sacrifice the chief if the harvest wasn't any good. They would, you know, all these bog bodies and stuff like that in Ireland, weren't they? They would sacrifice their chief if their harvest had failed. And, you know, the crucifixion sacrifice and all that. It's got a very sort of spiritual tone running through it, hasn't it?
But unfortunately, we're not able to be joined by any of the creatives tonight. So Paul Chalier did the music, Verity Hampson did the lights, Brian Thompson designed the set, and Judy Davis directed. But what's your question about the sound?
The director and the sound person worked it out. They It had nothing to do with us.
Yeah, we just say the words.
Yeah,
Paul had... I mean, it's he was in our rehearsal room every single day as well, and sort of playing with the sound as it came out. He was being inspired by Frill's words as we were trying to learn it and trying to, and the music was evoked by the haunting nature of the play, I think, Yeah, and I stand backstage next to the Woofers when when Colin's on, and you just listen to that music, and it really gets you into the mode of things by the time you're on. It's beautiful, very evocative, and just that drum beat underneath it has it's a reminiscent of cars, of travel, of, you know, just of the van sort of moving and, you know, never staying in one place. I think it's a beautiful piece of music that he's done. It's fantastic.
So the question was if the creative team discussed actor-audience relationships.
That was my first question to Judy on the phone when she asked me to do it. I said, who's Teddy talking to? She said, well, it's not a fourth wall. Maybe think of it like a Shakespeare soliloquy or something like that, because I think Teddy's got one foot in his room and this sort of thing, that this is his way of processing the grief that he's experiencing, and I think this happens on several nights, maybe every night, who knows. But he is also talking directly to you. And so as an actor, I'm speaking directly to you. I can see you. Some of you I can see in the spill from the lights. But I'm talking directly to you.
I mean, it's a great question because, for critics, this play is a problem play in a way because, people don't understand what they're desperate for is, can't we have more, where's the scene where they talk to each other? Is this actually a play rather than just talking to you? And yet, of course, the form has to inform the content, and here are actors who you're desperate for them to be talking to each other so they can actually communicate, and yet they're encased. It's a play of intense life, and yet the form is locking them into these worlds where they can't actually talk to each other, which is what you're so desperate for them to do, but they're now frozen and dead and unable to actually finally communicate. It's kind of one of the most heartbreaking things to sit through. It's a great question. How did they actually physically rehearse? Did you come in every day and watch everyone else rehearse?
Except for this extraordinary human being sitting here who was hauled in 2.5 weeks before we came to Melbourne. Because... It's the greatest feat I've ever seen in the theatre.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Paul was the actor. We lost the actor that played it in Sydney. Bit of luck, we'll never find him again. But we lost him, and Paul came in with such enormous courage. So Paul was at an enormous disadvantage. The director and Paul had to work together intensely. We tried to be around as much as we could, and that was a sort of encapsulation of how we each had to work. You had to work very intensely and very supportively with each other all the time, and we discussed the play relentlessly.
It took years off my life.
Yeah.
But, look, yeah. Colin and Alison were just so supportive and encouraging, and Judy was fantastic. She just got me there, and only just by the skin of my teeth.
Great question. How do they learn the lines?
How do we learn the lines?
Cram
for you.
Cram, most actors do it differently. Some people write, some people say it over and over again.
I walk and talk. I look like a complete nutcase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, a great question about Teddy. Paul, do you feel you know him well enough yet?
Well, I think it's not long. It's not when we encounter Teddy, I feel it's not long after Gracie's death. So he's still grieving, and will continue to grieve, because this was the major relationship of Teddy's life. 20 years they spent together in that old van, tootling around the countryside. And, he was absolutely in love with Gracie. And and as well with Frank.
The fireworks from Moomba we can hear outside, which probably means it's time for guys to have a rest. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Faith Healer Audi Forum Night podcast. For more information about Audi Forum Nights, visit mtc.com.au/Audi Forum Nights.